Welcome to Married to Who, a podcast where a couple of couples watch Doctor Who for the very first time. My name is Jake. With me are some of those couples: Cody, Sam, Alex. Jill is not here this week. She's having more fun with better people. Terry's also here. This week, we're here to talk about The Invasion, written by Derek Sherwin, directed by Douglas Camfield, aired November the 2nd to December 21st, 1968. Before we get started, it is time for everybody's favorite podcast segment, Cody's 80-second plot synopsis.
Don't give him that much time.
Where does it go? Hi, guys. It's Cody. He did not prepare much. He tried as much as he could. He didn't really find the time here, so he's going to do his best. Listen up. Unit's going to be chasing around doctor friends for a long time. Unit kidnaps him. He's like, yo, come over here. We're investigating the guy. And look, it's Lethbridge Stewart, and he's handsome and stuff. And also, there's this dude named Bond who's got this business on this street. And he's taking people and he's kidnapping them and he's sending them off to his factory. And first the doctor and Jamie goes there. And then Zoe and her new photographing girlfriend go there. And they're going roundabouts chasing each other's tail. And then the two ladies get snapped up, shipped off to a factory somewhere. And then the doctor and Jamie need to go find him. And then they finally find him because the bad guy Vaughn is like, come with me. I'll show you they're not there. And they were there the whole time. And Vaughn has a deal with the Cybermen through this speaker, and the Cybermen are going to take over the world, thus the invasion. And the doctor's like, no, you can't do that. And Vaughn's like, yep, I can and I will. And then there's like missiles shooting everywhere. Pew, pew, and everything's blowing up. And then the Cybermen are here. There was one in a box. But Vaughn is making a weapon to make the Cybermen feel feelings. They can't feel feelings. They've got space for that.
Time.
No, that's so much more.
Ears hurt. Why are you screaming the whole time? Oh,
it was an intense story arc, okay? But Packer.
I can't believe you didn't say Packer once. Oh my God.
I was listening to the Lazy Doctor Who podcast today, and one of the hosts counted in every episode how many times Vaughn says Packer. And I think in episode 3, it's like 11, or how many times he says Packer to Packer. And it was 11 times in episode 3. I think that was the most, but it was at least 4 in every episode.
But it's always just like that too. Packer.
Packer.
But he like starts and ends every sentence at him with his name. Anyway, Cody, valiant effort. I would prefer it if you don't prepare every time. I don't want you preparing for your part at all. It's better that way.
I'll admit, every single time I've ever done that, I've never had the time to prepare. There might have been one time.
You've had notes. I know you have.
I've had notes.
Anyway.
Wiki pages.
Cody. During the 60th or the 50th anniversary, they've done it again in the 60th, but they have yet to release the full results. During the 50th anniversary, Doctor Who magazine did a poll. There are 150-odd classic Doctor Who stories. Where in that list do you think The Invasion landed?
Number 10.
Sam.
6.
What?
Terry.
Oh, 56.
Alex.
26.
What?
It was 23.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Alex. I've heard Who fans have got to be loving this with all of the things in it.
It's got everything an old Who nerd needs. It's got Lethbridge Stewart. It's got
Cybermen. It's got Cybermen. Zoe in a
Zoe in tight bodysuit.
Yeah.
And the army.
And the military. Yeah. It's in unit.
Rockets exploding. Missiles exploding.
It's got intrigue.
Russian collaboration.
Oh no, our buzzwords.
It's got the length.
It's got the girth.
Does it all.
It does. You know who also really loves this story? Everybody who worked on it. It seems like they all just had the best time.
And it shows.
A big favorite of a lot of the people working on it. And everyone loves Kevin Stoney, who played Tobias Vaughn. And they're just like, you can't take your eyes off him. He's in a scene. You know no one's looking at you, so you can do whatever you want. And they're like, he's just great.
Have never Googled, like, a secondary actor in Doctor Who. I was on his Wikipedia page. I was on his IMDb page. I was all over, learning all about him.
Is his eye just naturally lazy, or was that a choice? He was in a car accident. Oh, Paca.
What else do you want to know about him?
All about him.
What else do you want to know? Research.
Would you like to know his favorite color?
He died of carcinoma at a very old age. Doctor Who, was it the...
convention?
No. Well, he went to the convention.
Where everybody was like, he's dead, but he wasn't dead, so he went to the convention.
Announced he was dead, and 2 years later, he went to convention to convince everyone that he wasn't dead. That's a great That's story.
Awesome.
Before the interwebs.
He does pop up in the making of documentary on the DVD. He's very old. He's got an oxygen line and a cane, but he's in really good spirits, and he's super happy, and he has a lot of fond memories. He remembers just loving the script, and he's saying, like, these words were so good. You could just do, all you had to do is say them, and it would just work. And then other people talking about him, and he's just, like, the sweetest old man. Like, he's just wicked old in this documentary. But people talking about him were like, he could just say, oh, here, have a cup of tea, and it sounded like he was threatening to kill you. Like, everything he said was just menacing, just naturally.
Also, that's the original reason I looked him up. I was like, he's so good at being a bad guy. Like his bad guy energy is there.
It's giving, I don't give a fuck.
I think it's giving Paca.
Yeah, Packer is also awesome at just being like the slimy thug
the who
clearly has a boner for hurting people. And he's so good every time in like those early episodes where he's like, Packer, go talk to the scientists. And, you know, if he doesn't want to do it, maybe persuade him. And Packer just gets this huge grin on his face. He's like, oh, man, I'm going to show him.
I'm going to start with the persuasion.
That's like the first few episodes. The last few episodes, he turns into a giant, incompetent idiot.
Oh, yeah. It's all about the... the story could have been called The Rise and Fall of Packer. After, like, episode 2, it's just a slow decline of him going into madness.
I put that on Vaughn, though, because had Vaughn just told him what the doctor was and what they were warned about... Packer would have handled it, man. He was down to just fucking put a bullet in him on the first sight.
Packer. Yeah, that's fair.
But Vaughn recognizes superior intelligence. He doesn't want to let it go to waste. And all Packer had to do was have a guard standing at the fire escape. Like, what kind of moron is he? It's like, oh shit, they got the elevator to stop. Well, I guess we're all fucked then. Come on, Packer. Put some people on every floor and find out where they come out.
I am just now seeing the picture of this signed image.
He just put it up.
Oh, yeah. I put into our Discord that while watching this, I ordered an autograph from the lady that plays Isabel.
Nice.
Who is Sally... That's not right. Yeah, Sally Faulkner. She was on the DVD, too. She had a great time. She loved the clothes. She talked about the clothes a lot.
You can just order a signature?
Yeah, it was on some website.
Wow.
Some of these people that, like, do the rounds at conventions, they have their own websites, and you can just go on there and get signatures. This wasn't that. This was, like, she had already signed this probably years ago.
Oh, I see. Well, that's kind of cool.
But, you know, it's like, $10.
Yeah.
This still is wild. It's just her and... Oh, shoot.
Zoe.
I was going to say Victoria. I knew that was wrong. Just staring at each other's chests. It's weird.
They're just chatting. But the two actors got along really well, the two of them, and they're obviously very happy to, like, have like another female to do a bunch of their scenes with, because in television, especially at that time, that's pretty rare to be like, oh, I get to spend, you know, 4 weeks with a girlfriend and just like run around and have fun.
That they did.
But the character of Isabel kind of, you know, once she commits the act of going down into the sewer and getting two people killed, only one of which she apologizes for, like very half-heartedly.
Well,
after that, there's kind of no redemption for her, and she's really doesn't have anything to do again until the end when the soldier comes to pick her up for their date.
Also,
one of the people she got killed was straight up a deserter. Just straight up booked it. Left his boys.
It's a weird way to spell Isabel.
It is.
No, that's like the totally normal way to spell Isabel.
I just...
Your move, Sam. Checkmate.
If someone would have just said spell Isabel, that's exactly how I would have spelled it.
With an O?
Yeah.
Sam is stuck on the French bell.
Yeah. But yeah, the other person that died was a police officer who's just like, hey, you can't just go into the sewers. And then he's going down there to get him and he gets murdered. She never says anything about him. She's just like, oh, this boy that is kind of sweet on me is mad at me. So I'm going to bring him some tea and be like, eh?
Well,
we good, buddy?
That guy should have minded his own business and just let some kids bang in the sewers. Damn.
True. By bang, he means throw grenades.
Bang, bang.
Hey, Terry.
What's up?
What'd you think of this one?
It was good.
Oh, we didn't even get to that.
Yeah. It's a cold open.
A 45-minute cold open.
No, it was a great story. I'd watched it before for the other podcast.
Yes, some time ago, me and Alex and quite often Terry would do like companion retrospectives where we would watch their first and last episodes. But because Zoe's last story is the same as Jamie's, we watched this one because it's kind of like, because Zoe gets a lot to do. It's like a very Zoe-centric story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Zoe was bomb.
She was.
Check that out in the archives on our website, marriedtowho.com.
Yay! Lots of names. Was glad when people just started dying off, so I didn't have to remember them all. But it was great because they all had like their own personalities and they stood out, and it was just enjoyable to watch all the scenes and everything too. Just, I placed it a little lower because I thought there would be more stuff, and for the length of how long it was, I wasn't sure. Yes. I wasn't sure if many viewers would appreciate that long of a story for classics.
Well, while we're talking about it, I put out yesterday, gave tons of notice to get some tweets from people. Got a lot of likes and a lot of retweets, but only one response. I don't think a lot of people were super excited to rewatch an 8-part story. So the only response we got is from James Swift at JamesSwift95, who said, good story. Did it have to be a billion episodes long? Probably not, but still good. I also love how the Cybermen don't even show up till halfway through.
Should have been a two-parter.
Should have been a two-parter.
Well, I believe it was originally written as a four-parter, or originally conceived as a four-parter anyway. But during this time in production, they were really struggling with scripts. They would hire a script based on an idea. They would, you know, get a draft, edit it, send it back for another draft. They were really like going deep into the process on scripts, and then they would just completely drop it and be like, okay, we need something. And so it's like, well, shit, we have to add an episode to The Mind Robber. We need to make The Invasion 8 episodes. And, you know, stuff we'll see later. We're going to get another pretty long story because of this reason. But we're only a few stories away from a whole new production team. And this is kind of the template, this story, of the kind of stories we're going to be seeing when we begin the 70s. Earth-based military unit, you know, running around shooting fun stuff. Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this one?
I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I remember watching it. And actually, like watching it back with the interspersing of the animated versus non-animated, it didn't really take a whole lot away from it. I didn't remember it being animated, or at least parts animated, when I first watched it. And it really, like how they did that and they transitioned between those episodes, it felt clean. Like, it felt good.
Yeah, I think it helps that, one, it's only two of the eight episodes. They go by pretty fast, especially when one of them's a first episode. First episodes always fly by because it's just like, we landed somewhere, this happens, yeah. We meet everybody, like, boom, boom, boom. Also,
is that what you call that painful 24 minutes?
You go to hell. But also the characters, the actors are all such like well-defined caricatures that like animating them is really easy. And you could like, everyone looks exactly how they're supposed to, except Jamie. He's kind of wonky, but everyone's pretty clearly defined pretty quickly. And, it just kind of makes it easier when you don't have to fight against shitty animation.
Yeah.
You cannot characterize a perfect man caricature.
But while we're on the animation front, there was one fun little thing is that in episode one, Zoe's wearing the wrong costume. She's supposed to still be wearing her cat suit that she was wearing in The Mind Robber. And we see it in the last episode when she goes back to Isabel's apartment, she puts it back on. But she's supposed to change when they go to Isabel's apartment and she starts like modeling for her. But the animators were like, we can't afford to have two character models for Zoe. So she's just wearing this the whole time. Just gets out of the TARDIS in a feather boa and miniskirt.
Heck yeah.
That works.
The other fun little animation thing is they, on Isabel's wall in her apartment, is Bad Wolf is written in the back there somewhere.
Oh,
because everything's on the wall.
Yeah, any animation that came out after 2006, there's going to be Bad Wolf somewhere. They love doing that. Cody?
It was way too many episodes, but what they did do with the episodes was not bad. Good story. Exciting.
Getting a lot of background noise from you.
7 out of 10.
we're rating things now?
Never weren't.
7 out of 10.
Sam?
Better than I thought it was going to be as an 8-parter. The story didn't feel like it was dragging, which I was surprised over. Fun story to follow along with. Fun characters. Mm-hmm. Made it a decent watch.
We don't care. Just give us
for
your numerical rating.
Story.
I think what James Swift said in his tweet there is kind of part of that. Like, holding off on having the Cybermen until episode 4. And especially, like, the original title was Return of the Cybermen, and not knowing that it was Cybermen, I don't know if, like, the stills on Amazon gave it away for you guys, they probably did, but not knowing it's Cybermen makes those first three episodes, like, kind of intriguing, and then Cybermen show up, you're like, oh, shit, and then it's, you know, two episodes of figuring out what they're doing, and then two episodes at the end of just, like, you know, a military show. So the fact that it's segmented into like three very different types of shows kind of really helps with that longer episode format.
The stills on Amazon are the same picture for the whole season.
Oh, okay.
So no. And we constantly never know where we are in the season because of that.
Okay, well, this story is called The Invasion.
And we may
so for next
or may
time,
not
do
have
the
watched
next one.
Part of some croutons.
That's exactly what it's called. And I imagine you do that all the time because you fall asleep every time you watch the show.
No, we started it because this also happens. Cody will start like an episode. I'll be like, are you sure you're on the right one? He's like, yeah. I'm like, this is not the same story. He's like, oh, yeah, it's not.
Well, that's because we're on a shared
account.
Just the
smallest amount of effort. it's so easy.
So immediately I was like, this, I mean, I know that I wasn't paying that close of attention, but I know this isn't it.
A little sneak peek.
Well, how'd you like it, Jake?
I love this one. It's one of my favorites. I'll watch it all day. I don't give a shit how many episodes it is.
It's a banger.
My Brigadier is back. He's properly the Brigadier now. Awesome villain. Cybermen take him or leave him, but and then all the cool military stuff. They had cooperation from both the Air Force and the Army. So at the very end, when they're running around shooting Cybermen, they had a real Army platoon there. And the commander of that platoon was very nice to Nicholas Courtney. Only ever gave him one note. Like, he saluted somebody, and he kind of walked by and goes, yeah, you wouldn't salute him. And that was it. Otherwise, he's very complimentary of him. But the director, Douglas Camfield, was in the military himself. So it was very important to him that the unit stuff was done correctly. And even though they're like made up uniforms because unit isn't real, he was a big part of like deciding what their uniforms would be like and how they operate and everything.
It looked good. I think everything with the military and like the personnel, like it just looked awesome. My favorite scenes are when the brig is on, like, boots on the ground commanding his platoon. We like, grenades, and then they all do the grenades, and then the rocket launcher. Like, just him being a commander in the field is awesome.
Yeah. And he was on the DVD making of also. He's great. He, you know, he wanted to be respectful for the military stuff, but also he understands that in a lot of the stories, especially once we get to the Third Doctor, that the Brigadier is a comedy character, but he's the straight man. So he is very stoic, but the actor himself, Nicholas Courtney, is a very funny guy. And so he knows that, like, being serious is what makes it funny. But it's just nice to, like, get, just, like, not have to deal with the explaining to the good guys and have them not believe you for two episodes about what's going on. Oh, the Brigadier found us. Hey, Brig, there's something, there's Cybermen. He's like, okay, who do I shoot?
Well, and everything was like, we have helicopter overwatch. If you ever need help, like, just call us. Like, he was such a bro.
Here's a cell phone. Just let us know if you need anything. Just solves so many problems. You know, we don't really have a sonic screwdriver yet that can just do everything.
Yeah.
So we have a Brigadier.
If he sends the signal, send in everything we've got. And it's just crazy.
Some of these pre-recorded missile launching shots, they were just too ready to use those.
for a quarter of an episode.
They contact the Ministry of Defense for...
I'm sure this is like B-roll from BBC News of like a missile test 14 years earlier.
Absolutely. And that one missile that has like four jetpacks on it...
That was nuts.
Jesus Christ.
It's a missile that's basically going to space. It needs some rockets to get it going.
But
it's a big missile.
That's real footage of somebody shooting a real rocket.
Yeah.
Did somebody shoot a rocket into space?
He just said it was B-roll from 14 years ago, probably.
So it's even older than the show.
It was, I have no idea when the footage is from. But yeah, like, there were... rockets that had rockets to get them going.
Jake just trying to be a rocket expert right now. Yeah, you saw it in the movie. It exists.
When was Sputnik?
Right around, or a couple years before this. This is 68, so yeah.
All kinds of missile launching.
Also,
this was... Go on.
The military technology that they had here is just mind-blowing in how old it is.
Sputnik was 57.
It's gotta be close. What year are we in Doctor Who?
68.
We're
mere months away from landing on the moon.
We went to the moon in 1969.
Sam, did you catch up on anything that... Isabel was saying when she's like, she's talking to Lethbridge Stewart. She's like, oh, you just need like a 5mm lens on a ultra wide 4K camera.
I don't think they had 4K.
Well, you know, you didn't catch up on that part. That wasn't, were you sleeping by then? She rattled, man. She popped off on like the camera technology of the time. I was like, you could easily take a photograph of Cybermen in the tunnels
I was like, you
at least
go,
you,
girl.
At least with that kind of jargon, you know that there are photographers around. Like, there are literally four of them shooting her at that moment. So they're probably fairly accurate.
We need to fact check everything she said. Maybe it was all bullshit, and we just don't know it. Like, real photographers saw that scene, and they're like, that's not how that works.
I didn't get to talk earlier when you guys were talking about the accuracy of UNIT being its own, like, military command post. I thought they did a very good job in, like, the radio jargon and the back and forth, and I was fairly impressed with all of that. Sometimes shows do that and you just cringe the whole time, even not knowing how to speak on the radio. You're like, I don't know how, but I know that's not right.
Roger, right. Dodger, over and out.
You know, it might get a little worse in some of the 70s episodes, but at least in this one, like, the director was in the military, so he at least is going to have some kind of insight. And Nicholas Courtney was very adamant about trying to at least be respectful, if not, like, 100% accurate all the time. The story also takes place in the future of when it aired, depending on which book you read. The story either takes place in 1975 or 1979, thus beginning the UNIT date controversy of basically every UNIT story we're going to see. So every UNIT story we see from now on has to take place after this one, and this already takes place in the mid-70s, but no writer knows that. And so they'll just write stories, and, you know, someone will say, like, oh, it's 1973 or whatever. And it's just like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then someone will write a story and say, it's 1986 and whatever.
Time travel.
Timey-wimey.
Easy time.
Parallel universes.
There's not a lore keeper that would, like, throw the banhammer on that?
No one gave that much of a shit. In the 80s, they would hire Doctor Who fans to be like, hey, tell us everything you know about this. And they'd be like, well, in 1967.
Hey, nerds. Tell me about your nerdness.
Jake subtly introducing himself to the world.
Man, some of the, like, there were, in the fanhood, there are famous fans that, like, did stuff like that in the 80s. Or, like, you know, I listened to some podcasts of guys who were, like, running conventions in the late 80s, early 90s. And now they're, like, podcasting. So they're, like, Doctor Who fans in their late 50s.
The most famous nerd that to ever do it is Russell T. Davies.
Yeah, that's accurate. Well, and David Tennant.
Yeah.
He's pretty knowledgeable.
This is one more series where they use the term exterminate before they show the monster. And I'm like, oh, it's Daleks.
Yeah.
And then it's freaking Cybermen. They got me twice now.
It's been a while since we've seen the Cybermen, and it's going to continue to be a while. I mean, the Daleks. That's why we see the Cybermen so often during the Second Doctor's era, because we don't have the Daleks right now. So, you know, it's been a few years. Maybe they don't care anymore. Maybe they don't feel like they'll ever have the Daleks back.
Hmm. Oh, how wrong those thoughts are.
Well, in the remaining 21 years of Classic Who, there's only, like, 8 more Dalek stories. Like, all the 80s Doctors each get one. I think Tom Baker gets 2, and I think John Pertwee gets 3, maybe? I might be off on that.
And they're all bangers.
They're all bangers.
I'm so excited.
Are we talking top 25 bangers?
Yes.
You won't remember.
Top 30.
Well, you can go back to the archives and listen to me and Alex rank all of the Dalek episodes. And the one that the fans chose last is my third favorite, so I'm not the one to ask.
Do you remember when I thought the Dalek was the Doctor's sidekick and best friend? I do.
I do not. I don't remember you till about 6 weeks ago. How long have we been doing this?
So long.
5 years.
Yeah, we did start in the summer of 2019.
Jesus Christ.
Did anyone notice a lot of, like, computer technology hate in this episode?
Also, no, we didn't. The doctor started in 2018.
The doctor's just mad. It was him and Zoe, I guess. Well, Zoe had fun with it. She didn't, like, hate it. But it's the doctor every single episode. I hate computers.
Yeah. Frickin' runs a computer. He drives one. And he hates computers all of a sudden. It's crazy.
You're right, Sam. It's 2018. Yeah.
I know.
See,
I had to look up when The Woman Who Fell to Earth came out.
I live with her. That's the problem. It's like a steel trap.
No, it's not. I just remember because I could not drink during the beginning of our podcast.
And unlike you, she remembers when your children were born.
That is true.
I remember that they were born. That's what's important.
No, what's crazy is that we did the podcast through the pandemic and Sam wasn't home somehow and still did podcasts. That's crazy.
We did? How did I do that?
I don't know.
You recorded from your hotel room.
You must have had my laptop.
Did I? That I no don't. One remembers. That was some dark times.
We never stopped, and you've missed very few.
I was working like 90-hour weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And your only respite was watching Doctor Who.
Had
with
a toddler
your friends.
With me and was pregnant as a single mom. Dark times.
Ooh, yeah.
Anyway.
What were you saying, Alex, before me and Sam started arguing about dates?
I was talking about the computer hate in this episode.
Yes. So that doesn't go away, like, really ever. But in Classic Who, John Pertwee hates computers, Tom Baker hates computers. But this was kind of the sentiment of the average person during this time, like, computers were scary. They were new. They took up entire rooms. People thought they were going to all lose their jobs and computers are going to take over everything. And they weren't wrong. And we now live in a dystopian future.
I love how there's also like a Classic Who episode of Luddites. And it's the exact opposite. It's like, man, these people are so stupid. They can't like grasp like new things to like propel humans forward. Like
that is like 16 years after this one.
I know. It's just funny. It's just funny to me.
Yeah.
Did Jamie go on a multi-week holiday?
No, he only missed episode 8, which is so weird.
He was in episode 9. He said bye and then ran into a field.
There's all the 8 episodes, and
no, he was not in 7.
He had one scene where he goes back to sleep.
He got shot in episode 7, and in episode 8, he's being tended to, and the scene where they go back to the TARDIS and they're wandering around the field, that was shot beforehand. Because they're in that field shooting them coming out of the TARDIS, so you just quickly shoot them going back in the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Low key, best scene.
The well, they're doctor just arms the out.
Doctor low squat, just arms spread in a field, sumo walking. Yes.
As we learn from Captain Jack about 40 years later, if you're going to park your invisible ship, park it somewhere memorable.
Yeah.
He ties it to Big Ben, if you remember, from Captain Jack's first episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I need more of the Doctor and Companions wandering fields looking for the TARDIS.
You miss the days of William Hartnell just wandering down a French gravel road, just muttering to himself. Although it wasn't really William Hartnell. No, the best scene is one that we didn't get to see because it's animated, but that's the helicopter escape scene.
Oh, yeah.
I wish so badly that existed because it looks so much fun. The documentary gets a lot into how they shot it. Where we're entered an era now where we can actually properly edit. So technology has come so far in the 5 years. Actually, one of these episodes aired on the 5th anniversary of Doctor Who. So we're 5 years in. We can properly edit. We're shooting stuff out of order to save money. And the helicopter, for safety reasons, cannot fly over the rooftop of the building that they're in. So all the helicopter scenes are shot in that field where they're wandering around. So we get a lot of shots of them running around on the roof and like a ladder and them holding onto it. And then we cut to the field and all the shots of everybody is like the cameraman laying on the ground. So we're just shooting up at their faces. And the helicopter is there. We got Mad Mike the pilot back Fury from the Deep.
The dude that eats glass?
Yes. And swings on chandeliers. So we got him back. They do get everyone on the ladder and lift him up about 10 feet. Sally Faulkner said she was fucking terrified and that her skirt kept coming up and she was like saying stuff and the director was like, hey, one for the dad. So like, we got to get this shot.
Oh no.
But then Fraser Hines, he was saying that because he's wearing a kilt and he never wanted Jamie to be shot from below because he was wearing underwear. And for his character, Jamie would not be wearing anything under his kilt.
The secret has been revealed.
He didn't want that to be shown. So we do have some shots like when they're in the elevator shaft and when they're coming down the fire escape of Jamie shot from below climbing down a ladder. And so the cameraman, at the request of Fraser Hines, put on like a lens so that the light above them was blackening everything in the foreground. So when you see up his kilt, all you see is blackness. And so that was kind of cool. But he also, in that helicopter scene...
What about one for the moms?
He was actually wearing underwear because he's not a psycho. And he didn't want everyone to see his everything. But for when he had to get up on the helicopter ladder, he had his costumer put fishing weights around the hem of his kilt so it stayed down.
Smart.
Ingenuity.
They should have had fishing weights in the hem of his kilt since the instantiation of the kilt.
Aren't kilts just heavy?
I mean, they're folded. Or pleated.
Pleated.
But I also think they're... Aren't they also just heavy?
Well, mostly they're like wool, so yeah, they're going to be a thicker...
Girthier.
Girthier.
Girth and kilt. Length of the kilt matters.
It shows and grows.
It's like a Dragon Ball Z character. I've been holding back this whole time, and they take off the kilt and it falls to the ground like it weighs 300 pounds.
This isn't even my final form.
Hey, Terry.
Yes.
What's up with Isabel's waitress dress? Like, why does she look like a 50s diner waitress?
I don't know. She... Oh, boy. I'm not sure. Her character kind of just irks me weird.
It has, like, a printed-on apron on the front, and then, like, actually, like, a bow in the back, like you would tie an apron.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I don't know. I'm really hoping that, like, it was for, like, a specific kind of shoot, since she was, like, taking photos of herself, and, like, maybe this will make me cute or something. I don't know what she was doing that for, but... Yeah, like her character just didn't evolve at all like I wanted her to, because she would just then flirt with Jimmy the whole time, and then she would just take pictures during the war, and that was it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying earlier is,
yeah,
once they get to the part where they go down in the sewers, there isn't really anything left for her character.
Mm-mm.
And so, you know, at one point she makes tea, at the end she takes some more pictures of Zoe. The scene where she's taking pictures of the doctor when he's on the ground and he starts like fixing his hair, that's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, that was good. Like in the middle of a firefight.
Yeah.
But that scene's also great because Zoe like quickly stops to check on the doctor, and then she's like the second one running for that room. Like she's in battle mode and she's going.
Zoe is a cool character.
Yeah.
Also, her being able to tell the military person, no, I have this. And he's like, no, you don't. Yeah. And the the Brigadier is standing up for her, and then she gets it right.
Yeah, it's another, like, cheat code of having the Brig there is, like, we don't have to do this runaround of, like, people. Like, why would they believe her? She's, like, 16.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't expect this minuscule person to be a mass genius. But then when the Brig's like, hey, just fucking listen to her. She needs 30 seconds. We can give her 30 seconds. And then she just... And then they're all, like, madly in love with her.
What they say, like, she's way cuter than a computer or something. Can we keep her?
Which
it's like, ugh.
Not like the best compliment in the world, but...
Also, when she destroys the computer, she's like, I'm not letting this computer beat me. At the beginning, when they went to the evil compound.
Yeah.
Also great. Zoe killed it. This... story.
Her maniacal laughter when it explodes.
A little.
And her
much.
Eyes are evil. Like she is. She could have been a good villain.
She's also just a good actress.
Yeah.
I was really impressed by her this whole story.
It's her job, bro.
Yeah, there's people that are bad at every job. There's people that are good at jobs too.
Yo dog.
Cody and I are just talking about how it's refreshing to have a female companion that is part of the team,
competent, actually does something.
But
yeah.
it's nice to have a future companion that like has knowledge. Maybe not beyond Earth, but beyond, like, her years. Like, you can still have a young person that's, like, you know, hot or whatever. But because she's from the future, her education's different. So, like, things that seem amazing to us are pretty mundane for her. And the fact that we almost never do that again is really weird. Like, in New Who especially, that we haven't really had a future companion or a genius on really any level.
Get on it, Doctor Who.
The closest was Captain Jack, right?
Yeah, and so you could leave, and there's so many scenes where like they go do something, and Captain Jack's just working on the TARDIS to be like, "Oh, we need this thing done, so we're just gonna have Jack do it off screen so that it helps push the story along."
Yeah,
which is why you have a companion like that.
Man, I now that you say that, I do want a future companion. That'd be so fun. Like, maybe have two companions, one from, like, current day and then a future companion to, like...
Even, like, in this one, like, Jamie's from the 1700s. Like, they're wildly apart, but Jamie's character isn't really treated like he's from the past. He's basically a swinging 60s kid. Like, there's very little in his character that denotes him being from the past.
Yeah, like, they'll say, oh, that's an aeroplane. He'd be like, all right, cool. It's like, all right.
Yeah. Like, the fact that they're escaping out of an elevator means absolutely nothing to him when he should be freaking out about just what an elevator is. Just, like, going insane.
I feel like if he's ridden in the TARDIS, everything after that is eh.
But from the inside of the TARDIS, nothing's happening. Like, you're in one place, then you're in another place. Like, there's no, like... mechanism or anything that he can see or understand, and so he just goes with it. But when it comes to like kind of early days, like when they're at Gatwick Airport in the Faceless Ones, he's freaking out over airplanes, but like that's really it. He never really does anything like that again.
He tries to kill a redcoat. That's about it.
That's gonna happen again. somehow not the only redcoat we see in this season. Let's see. I've got a few more fun. I wrote so many fun facts.
Hit us.
So Derek Sherwin was the writer of this. He was the outgoing script editor. Mind Robber was his last one. There's kind of a pseudo tradition of the outgoing script editor writing the next story for the new script editor. So we're done with Derek Sherwin, but he's awesome. He's going to come back to produce Troughton's last story and Pertwee's first story because they wanted to have like a strong hand who's familiar with the show during the transition. And that will make him the shortest running producer of Doctor Who ever. He does two stories. Douglas Camfield, the director, he's been with the show off and on since the beginning. He was a production assistant on the very first episode. He even directed some pickup shots for An Unearthly Child. This is his fifth full story directing, and he'll be back for two more in the 70s. And this is the first story for the new script editor, Terrence Dix, who is just the best on all the DVDs. Like, fandom refers to him as Uncle Terry. He's just the most loquacious, like, just big, fat British dude who just, like, is just, like, the jolliest guy. He's so much fun. But he will remain the script editor through all of the Third Doctor's five seasons, and he'll go on to be, like, one of the most prolific Doctor Who writers ever. He'll script edit 28 stories. He'll write six stories himself, including the Second Doctor's last story, which we'll see relatively soon. He wrote 64 target novelizations of Doctor Who stories and 16 original Doctor Who books. He just did a lot for Doctor Who, and he did a lot of conventions. Fans love him. He was just the best.
What a nerd.
Hey, you get a job when you're in your 30s and it's a good job, you just fucking hang on.
Preach. Yeah.
But I mean, you're a writer. You love writing. You love writing sci-fi, and these people keep asking you to do it. Let's see, what else I got? Oh, it was during the filming of this. This is the first story of the final production block of this season. That production block is 34 episodes long, but it was during this one that Fraser Hines announced he was leaving. So that will happen eventually. Let's see, Wendy Padbury's on holiday for episode 3. You guys are all like, hey, Jamie's never in this. Wendy Padbury wasn't there at all for episode 3. You didn't even notice.
Who's that?
Zoe.
Oh. I just kind of assume that female companions just get set aside at times. So really, honestly, I don't notice as much when they're not in it.
That's fair. Yeah. And especially when there's two companions and they tend to pair one off with somebody and then have the Doctor run around with the other one. During this season, it tends to be the Doctor and Jamie running around together. And so that other companion could, be easily just kind of forgotten about for a 20-minute span. Man, that was Midwest of shit. Span. Holy cow. Did anyone hear the cyber planner, like that machine in Vaughn's office, mention Planet 14?
Yes.
I did not. I've watched this three times.
Like,
I never
multiple times.
I cannot understand the Cyberman voice. I hate it. I can't wait till it changes.
It's called subtitles.
I'm not a fucking nerd. I don't need subtitles.
This is a guy who can't understand.
I just prefer to not know what's happening. Anyway, so it tells Mon that Jamie and the Doctor are enemies and that they had been on Planet 14. This is another subculture of the Cybermen that we haven't met before. It's also the earliest Cybermen we've met. The Cybermen that the First Doctor meets, that takes place in 1986. Those Mondasian Cybermen.
Ooh.
So this is technically the first Cybermen encounter on Earth so far. So them saying that they've met the Doctor and Jamie means that it happened in a story we haven't seen. So there's a novel called Iceberg that, like, while Mondas was drifting through space, a group of Cybermen called the Faction went and found this Planet 14 where they evolved separately from the Mondasian Cybermen. So that's why how we can say that, like, or see that they're different looking than those ones, because obviously we're kind of updating the costumes every time we see them. They're in a two-piece now. The guys can kind of move around a lot easier. There's also a comic called The World Shapers that says Planet 14 was Marinus from the Keys of Marinus, and that it was the Vord who evolved into Cybermen. And in that comic, the Sixth Doctor and Jamie meet them on that planet. So either way, the invasion takes place before every Cybermen story we've seen so far.
That's awesome. They're like the Cybermen costume in this, I kept thinking, is so iconic and incredible. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love this rendition.
I like the helmet. We see it. Yeah. So there's the famous shot of the Cybermen coming down in front of, like, St. Peter's Cathedral. That's like that was like on Radio Times in full color before the story came out. It was this huge shot. It's reproduced in Peter Capaldi's story, Darkwater, where the Cybermen are all coming out those same steps. And in that, Kate Stewart rocks up with a Cyberman head like behind her back and throws it at the Cyberman. I think that's one of these Cyberman heads. And this is basically the design of the Cybermen, like, until midway through the 80s. I think they get tweaked a little bit. But the thing, I like the Cyberman costume a bit, but I hate that their boots have shoelaces. Why do they have shoelaces? It's supposed to be their feet. They shouldn't have to lace up their shoes.
That's funny.
I like that.
I didn't even think of that.
Let's see. John Levine played Sergeant Benton, one of the unit soldiers. He had signed on to play an extra, just a unit soldier in the background. And there is a shot where you see him in a different uniform, just like in the background. But the actor they had hired to play Benton was constantly late, so they fired him and they replaced him with Levine. And they replaced him because everyone just kind of liked him. Like, he's just a nice guy. And everyone's like, oh, John's the best. Let's just have him do it. And he had been in some Doctor Who before. He'd been a Cyberman. He was one of the Yeti. So he knew this director. But he's just like a super tall dude. He's not like a trained actor. He does monster stuff. And because of this like happy coincidence and people just liking him because he's a nice dude, he got to play Benton in 16 stories over the next 10 years with 3 different doctors.
Wow.
And, you know, got to spend the rest of his life, and I believe he's still alive, you know, going to conventions and making money doing that. And it was like this huge thing that happened for him. It's really great. And when he's on the DVDs, he always has like awesome suits, like big, like red ties or big, like colorful things. He's very gregarious and just dope.
Fun.
And he's gigantic. So when you put like a flashy suit on him, he really stands out.
Iconic duo was born.
Yeah. We kind of brought it up, but the Ministry of Defense really appreciated the positive light in which the military was portrayed in the story. So they were quite happy to give some assistance by the Air Force and the Army. Like, they're on an airbase at one point, and they're like, the Brigadier drives a Jeep off of like a real like military aircraft.
Where's the Ministry of Magic?
Scotland. Oh, that's where Hogwarts is. I don't know where. Well, they're in London when they go to the Ministry, aren't they? Like when they go down the toilets or down the phone booth?
I don't know. I'm a muggle.
Truer words have never been spoken.
Why? Why, when all of the people were sleeping, was Zoe giving one of them a back massage?
To help him revive, to kind of get him going. Mm-hmm. Right? Hey, buddy.
No, it was weird.
You okay there, guy?
It was all awkward.
You need a little back rub?
He was also the commander. They needed him up and running.
All right, I like to look at the ratings. This might be the last story that actually gets pretty decent ratings. I think it's kind of a downhill from here.
Hey.
For this season, this is when we're... Like, when the second Doctor started, ratings dipped. We're kind of on a incline right now, and then we're going to see a decline. But episode 1, 7.3 million. Episode 2, 7.1. Episode 3, 7.1. Episode 4, 6.4.
Uh-oh.
Episode 5, 6.7. Episode 6, 6.5. Episode 7, 7.2, and episode 8, 7 million. So we're kind of hanging around. No huge variance. 800,000 between the highest and the lowest.
They held on. All 8 episodes. They were there for it. Bad weather.
Well, they didn't have to watch them all at once. They got 2 months to do it. Easy when it's 25-minute chunks. And you get to hear some guy go, say Packer, 1,100 times.
That's crazy to think that when you sign on to do a story, you're going to be on television for 2 months.
Yeah.
That's kind of big, no? Like, you're just...
Well, you're also working for 2 months. Like, they're basically shooting an episode a week.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
So, you know,
that's a lot
of... an actor's life is...
A lot of publicity.
They got the gig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm just thinking, like, if you're the Brig or Benton or, like, any of the side characters, Like, you're just on TV for 2 months. That's huge.
I think it's something like Echo, which just aired on Disney Plus.
I need to watch that.
6 months ago when you hear this podcast. You know, it has 5 episodes, and some of those actors that are in it went around and did all their publicity, and we might never hear from some of them again because it was not well received.
Oh, no.
I enjoyed it. It was, the fight scenes were good. But, you know, there's like True Detective season 4 is airing right now. It's going to be like 8 or 9 episodes. It'll air for 2 months. And, you know, Jodie Foster's a big star, but some of the other people in it, you know, they get to be on TV for 2 months and then maybe you don't see them again for a while.
Yeah.
The life of a television actor. Terry, you're going to say something.
I did not like Vaughn's office with the how that wall opened up. It was so impractical.
Very slowly and jittery, clearly being pulled by a couple guys.
Yeah, and it went up on, like, it folded up on an edge. Like, what the, how does the ceiling look? How does this work into an actual room? Like, it was so stupid. I'm sure someone was like, this is so cool, because no wall ever opens like this. And it's like, walls don't open. There's a reason. This was impractical. It just...
Well, if it opens, it's not a wall. It's a door.
I know. Well, this door was not good. Did not like it.
Real weird thing to be upset about.
Yeah. That's like one of my major flaws with this story, was that wall. I hated it.
While we're talking about The Office, one of the reasons this story is 8 episodes is because it's also one of the most expensive stories they've done so far. I heard someone say it was the most expensive, but if you have it be 8 episodes, you're amortizing that cost over a couple months. That really helps. Also, the genius in the writing of having one line explaining why his office in the city and his office in the country are identical.
It's very good.
Like, we're not building 2 sets, guys, so better write something in there. Cody, you'll be happy to hear that the big fight scene at the end with all the Cybermen and the soldiers, that was at a Guinness factory.
Wow!
A Guinness or the Guinness?
Not the Guinness, not the one we were at in Dublin, but one in London, the London area. There are a lot of on-set photos of people having lunch with big Guinness glasses that are full up.
Heck yes.
Oh my.
Sign me up.
Fraser Hines told the story of, like, the big wigs, like, taking him and Patrick Troughton up to their offices and breaking out, like, the really expensive brandy and cigars, like, in the middle of the day. And then,
Bring that back. Fuck.
And then they're like, oh, we're just shooting action today. We don't have to talk. We're just running around and just getting fucking hammered. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jake.
Who's your MVP?
Kevin Stoney.
Yeah. Cody.
Who plays Zoe?
Wendy Padbury.
Kevin Stoney.
Terry.
Wendy Padbury.
Alex.
Paca. I choose Bob.
Oh, I closed my notes. I don't have who played Packer.
Peter Halliday.
Thank you. And he had just finished working on a different TV show with Derek Sherwin, so that's why he was hired. Just a great sniveling bad guy. And just such smart choices of, like, having his comb over, like, get all distorted when he's having a bad time, and then showing up again when he's back in Bond's good graces, completely, you know, everything immaculate and well-groomed. Just good. No, I'm going to Douglas Camfield, the director. He, at both times, is super strict, but everybody loves him. And so he's the kind of guy, he's a military guy, who, like, always comes in on time and on budget. He's super over-prepared, so he knows everything that's going to happen, everything that's going to go wrong. But at the same time, he knows that, like, these actors are a bunch of pussies and you need to coddle them a little bit. So when they're doing rehearsals, they'll be like, okay, let's do a fun one. You have an Irish accent, you have a Scottish accent, you have a Welsh accent. And then everyone gets to kind of do fun. And then, or it'd be like, do a fast one, where they all talk at, like, double speed. But he knows, he's really just making sure they all know their lines. But Everyone on the set who's on the documentary, he's not on the documentary. I don't know if he had passed by then, but he was awesome. It's a really tough shoot. A lot of stuff, a lot of editing. So a lot of like making sure you have all the shots. They rehearsed in shooting order as well as like in story order. So you rehearse in story order so that you know like every scene, how your character is progressing in like their story and your emotions and everything and your intensity. And then they rehearsed in shooting order so that they would get used to like knowing on which scenes, like where they're supposed to be at in those levels. So yeah, just a fucking G.
Hell yeah.
Dougie Camfield.
Dougie.
Show me how to Dougie. Show me.
Guys, the next one. It's called The Croutons. 4 episodes.
Croutons.
The Croutons. 4 episodes. Enjoy it while you can. We're not going to get a whole lot of 4-episoders for a while.
Oh.
2 episodes?
There will be one more 2-episode, but that's a couple decades away. but yeah, I don't remember much about this one. I saw it like when I bought the DVD in 2012, maybe, but don't remember a ton. So it'll be fun for me to see some, and it'll be easy.
Hell yeah.
Alex, do the song. This has been Married to Who, our episode on The Invasion. If you'd like to participate, you can do so by following us on Twitter, Married to Who Pod. If you want to listen to our episodes, you can do so Spotify, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. If you want to listen to anything older than our 100 most recent ones, you can do so on our website, marriedtowho.com. On behalf of myself, Jake, Cody, Sam, Jill, somewhere out there, Alex, and our producer Terry, thank you so much for listening. Please join us next time for The Croutons.